Hello, hope you had a great Christmas and a fantastic new year. This is the first podcast of 2018. I'm Harry Brady and this is a football fans podcast from the people behind Celtic Underground. It's been a long night for me tonight because I've actually recorded two podcasts. The first one I recorded is going to go out second, and it will be about the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act and the possible repeal of that with FAC spokesperson or somebody from FAC, Paul Quigley. So that will come out next. But first of all, I got Lawrence Donegan on the phone all the way from the west coast of America. He's still there. He's not been deported by Donald Trump yet. I think he might be the last foreigner in the country. And decided to chat to Lawrence. We started off talking about the Rangers game, really then moved into where Celtic are at the moment and the transfer window that's coming up in January, and seemed to talk more about players going out because that's where all the rumours are. No rumours about players coming in. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lawrence Donegan. So I'm joined now by someone who, for once, I'm going to ask him his opinion all the time, because normally he just gets talked over by his podcast partner, Remy. I'm joined by Lawrence Donegan. How are you doing, Lawrence?
How are you doing there, Harry? It's really good to be away from that. He's an anchor to me. He's holding my career back as a Celtic podcaster.
He drags
me running a big... He drags me down.
He does? Yeah.
He's Ernie Wise to my Eric Morecambe.
I always remember him sticking out a tweet in the Ronnie Dyler age. Every European game, he would just tweet, "I wouldn't have picked that team." And about the fourth time he tweeted it, I tweeted him back saying, "So what would you have done?" And he replied saying, "I wouldn't have picked that team."
No, to be honest, he is the star of the show. But it's not often I'm right, but I'm always wrong in his eyes. Anyway, no, it was good to get away from the shackles of him. Tonight I'll be able to really show what I really know about football.
Oh, well then. We'll be finishing in 5 minutes.
You're worse than him. What's wrong with you?
So before we start, you're not on the blacklist of being deported from America yet. You're safe.
Oh, it's mental. Honestly, Harry, it's mental. Every day, I mean, we've got our 12-year-old lad. He's off school today because it's shut. But he's watching the news. He's just waiting for the whole thing to implode every day. It's crazy. It's one new madness after another madness. It's insane. I haven't read this book yet. I haven't read the book, the Fire and Fury book, yeah. But hopefully it's arriving in the post soon. But it is absolutely insane. And it's kind of dangerous. I mean, I don't know how it feels over there, but over here it really does feel teetering, really teetering. I mean, it's winding up all the news networks. And then you have this, I hate to use the word, but you have this almost like a 1930s, propaganda operation going on, with Fox News and, these Trump acolytes going on TV and just spouting about the genius of the glorious leader, and it's just insane.
Do you know what
America's sleeper.
I said to someone, Trump does remind me of Dave King from the perspective of, see this book, it doesn't actually change that much because the people from the rest of the world are just laughing a wee bit harder at it and a wee bit louder. The people in America who don't like Trump, it reinforces everything they think about him. And the people who do like Trump, it reinforces to them that the fake news media is out to get their guy. And I do think that's a bit like King. Whenever any negative story comes about Rangers, those of us on the outside are just laughing. And the people who think Kate King is "we are a people" type people, it just reinforces their prejudice that the Tim based media are out to get them, and it doesn't seem to change anything.
Speaking of which, did you see the back page of the Record this morning with Rangers are magically, this outfit in Mexico, I don't know what they're called, are magically going to pay the whole salary. And I mean, it was just this boy, you know, the drunk that they bought from Mexico.
Yes.
They're going to pay his whole salary, take him on loan. Rangers will actually make a profit on the deal. I mean, it's just, I mean, you're reading that and you just think, are there no limits to the appetite for insulting people's intelligence? I mean, do people actually read this and believe it? I'm not sure I can compare the whole thing to the Trump situation, but I mean, there is sort of certain levels of insanity that appear very familiar.
And it's
crazy stuff.
It's that thing of, and they're taking him on loan, but of course they then committed to buying him at whatever the purchase price is. So there you go, it's done and dusted. Oh. Money's in the bank.
Oh, it's absolutely hilarious. The same with the other, who's the boy? I don't know the boy they're buying from.
Jamie Murphy.
From Brighton as well. I mean, that, you know, we're buying him, and then, oh no, it was a loan deal all the whole time. This day, I don't know whether it was some statement or something. I kind of caught a glance of it. And, you know, now it's all kosher. We never really, you know, we're going to get him in the summer, and he's our player in the summer. And that's it. I mean, you've got to ask yourself why they're not buying him now. You know, many things could happen between now and the summer. What if he goes and scores 25 goals in the last 4 months of the Scottish Premier League season? You think he's going to stay at Rangers? I think Rangers will be able to afford the fee. I mean, you just never know. But again, this is all kind of glossed over, and we'll just play on. Again, the limits of people's credulity is constantly amazes me, or certain people's credulity constantly amazes me. Absolutely mental.
But there's a certain section of them who then turn around and say it's brilliant, it's financial genius in Rangers, because what it's done is it's meant that they don't have to spend that $2 million in January, because they postponed the $2 million, so that gives them an extra $2 million to spend in January.
Just
ignoring the fact that the whole problem is that Brighton said, can you pay the money up front, and Rangers said, no, we can't afford it.
Anyway, but I mean, this is from the same. I mean, not. I mean, there's lots of good journalists at the Daily Record. I know there is. I know them. There's some really good journalists there. But it's from the same stable that brought you Barry Mackay to Red Bulls Leipzig for $6 million last. I think it was this time last year.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And the thing is, I watched a bit of Red Bull. I mean, they're some outfit, by the way. And then I watched the Nottingham Forest Arsenal game, and lo and behold, here comes Barry Mackay, subbed on in the 89th minute to waste some time. But here, a year ago, he was going to Red Bull Leipzig for $6 million, by the way.
And that was because
and then I hear this
talk of a £30 million in belly, so they had to chuck something in.
But again, it's just bonkers. And then who knows? Oh, yeah, of course, I heard the $6 million to Leipzig. I was listening to one of the might have been Super Scoreboard, and some Rangers fan on, saying a very smart guy actually, and was talking about the Mackay deal to Nottingham Forest for $500,000, which is what about he was worth. I actually quite like him as a player, but and this boy was part in this. Well, he was going to Leipzig last year for $6 million, and I'm, what planet are you on? Anyway, enough about all that nonsense.
If they did that, then they're also the worst. They're also the worst people running a football club, because they just blew $5.5 million.
Well, that was it. I mean, the boy's point was well made, but it was based on an utter fiction printed by Keith Jackson on the back page of the Daily Record. Actually, I got into it with one of Jackson's colleagues back in Scotland about this, and he'd won the Sports Writer of the Year. I didn't even know the guy. Sports writing, and I was like, what a joke that is. And the boys go, no, he's a great hack. And I'm thinking, well, hang on a second, you know, can he write? Loves a flyer? I mean, how can that be, you know, how can you be Sports Journalist of the Year if you can't he write? I mean, his prose are trainer-esque in terms of writing, i.e. off, and loves a flyer. And I saw somebody having a go. It was his son, Robert Greave, at the Sun, was having a go at him, They all got some interview with Gordon Strachan, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think the record put in the back page is an exclusive. And the boy from the Scottish Sun saying, "Well, we've got an interview with Gordon Strachan, but I'm too embarrassed to put the word exclusive on it because it's everywhere."
Although I am led to believe that the only people who got the interview with Gordon Strachan, so somebody told me, are the people who were sycophantic to Gordon Strachan when he was Scotland manager, was the exact quote I was given.
Yeah. I never even read it, I'm kind of done with him. Again, he was saying something the other day, Strachan, I can't remember what it was, but it was more nonsense. Bad to get him out of his life. Your pal Steve McGowan, he doesn't hate the Scottish media anymore. When they're paying him, and he doesn't hate the media so much when they're actually paying him. I mean, classic.
Yeah, but he's like all these guys who is obnoxious and difficult to deal with when they're in the job, and the minute they get the other side of the fence and they have to take a shilling off, these guys suddenly become, Roy Keane is another prime example, sitting on the ITV football sofa every European game.
There's a lot of that in the golf world as well. Nick Faldo, for one, he was a long time pretty awful to the press. Then his career's over, and then he slips into the commentating booth in America, and he's all of a sudden he's hail fellow well met. There's a few of those in golf. Howard Clark was another one. Noted curmudgeon in his great player, by the way. Noted curmudgeon in his days of playing professional golf. Then slipped into the commentary booth and he was everybody's mate. Yeah, no thanks, not for me.
No, you'll just be obnoxious to everybody all year round.
No, but I mean, there's guys, in the same in football, there's guys who, been good guys through their career, did their best for the press boys. And, you welcome them in the media world, I think. Because they sort of a requisite amount of, humanity. I'm not going to over egg this, but basic civil decency, treating people like people. So you welcome that type into the media world, but the other type, the Gordon Strachan types, no thanks.
Right, well, we'll move on to Celtic, and we've not done a podcast since the game, the 0-0 defeat to Rangers at Celtic Park in the end of the year. So,
was that the one where we had 53% possession, more shots on target, more shots off target? Is that the one?
That's the one, yeah. That's the one where we were the better team. Aye.
That's a 0-0 defeat.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I see. Go on.
Well, do you think, what was your, I'll get into the detail of players and whatever, but what was your overall impression of the game?
Overall impression of the game, well, I was pretty disappointed, I must admit. I thought that the coaching staff would get the team up for it, really up for it. I can't remember if we had a game that in the midweek before. I'm not sure we did.
We had and they did. We played on the Tuesday, they played on the Wednesday.
Right, so even less of an excuse. So I thought that we would be well up for it. Pretty disappointed, really. I mean, we still had, best of the chances. But, credit to them. I thought they did pretty well, given the limited players they've got. I mean, they set up pretty well. They exposed certain weaknesses in the team. But again, the overall performance was kind of a one with the first half of the season, really. We're definitely nowhere. We're not. It's hard to remember back to last season, but the best of last season, we're nowhere near that, And I don't think anybody can argue with that. And it's slightly disappointing, and this performance is slightly disappointing in the sense that you look at it and you think, well, we dubbed them 5-1 twice last year. And we should be, theoretically, we should be better because Rodgers had more time to bed in, get his philosophies over to the players and all that, and obviously football isn't like, it doesn't work in straight lines, but it was just particularly disappointing. I had no expectations that we were going to give them 10-1 or anything like that, but I thought we would give them a right good doing, and we didn't. Is that fair enough?
I think it is, so thanks very much. And so what did you think of the team when the team was picked? It was, I'll refresh your memory.
Right,
I'll refresh your memory. It was Gordon, Lustig, Boyata, Ayer, Tierney, Brown, McGregor, Forrest, Armstrong, Sinclair, Dembele.
My immediate thought, I was shocked that Incham didn't start. Absolutely shocked. And I thought that spoke to a little bit of... lacking humility is overing it. But clearly, Rodgers really likes McGregor as a player. But Incham had really started to play well. And I would have thought, given... If you look at that Rangers... You know, Murty had just come in. The way they played the last one, Murty got the other famous victory, you know, the 1-1 victory.
Yeah.
Last year, when Clint Hill scored a scuffy goal in the last 10 minutes and Liam Griffiths got denied a Stonewall penalty of all time, that one. So I would have thought they would have come in. Looking at I would have been thinking they're going to come in strong here, you know, quite physical. And I thought Incham would have provided a kind of bulwark against that, and he had also been playing really well. I think to play McGregor and Armstrong in midfield together in a game like that, I wouldn't have done that. That was my only issue. I mean, there was a shout over the Dembele or Griffiths thing, but again, there's no really. I mean, I just don't think that's even a debate for me. I think Dembele's not miles ahead, but he just gives you a lot more. And saying that, you know, if you're playing McGregor and Armstrong in midfield, which is pretty lightweight, you must be thinking we're going to dominate then. If that's the case, then there is a case for picking Griffiths over Dembele, because Dembele, I mean, as well as being he's a better all round player, but you pick Dembele especially when you're looking for an out ball. You know, so that was my thoughts on the team. And the other one, I suppose, well, Simunovic, I don't know, did he play? Simunovic, Ayer
on the bench.
Yeah, so he picked Ayer over Simunovic. Yeah, Ayer's been very, very impressive. I think, to me, that's a toss-up. I mean, Simunovic hasn't had enough game time, but clearly Brendan Rodgers has had enough of Simunovic. He's done with his constant stream of injuries, and he's kind of made his mind up on Ayer. It's a pretty rapid ascent for Ayer, actually, when you think about it. Sent out to Kilmarnock last year. Rodgers has never been particularly effusive about him, even when other people were. I mean, he's spoken well enough about him, but he's never raved about him in the way he's raved about other players. Maybe it's because he's young, but clearly Rodgers had done the same amount of it. And I had no problem with him picking Ayer. I would have picked Ayer over Simunovic. So that's my thoughts. Plenty of thoughts. What about yourself?
Incham was the one player that I thought should have been in the team, and it was odd because earlier on in the season, when Incham was struggling to establish himself in the team, he was getting picked ahead of Armstrong and McGregor. So in the last few weeks and months, where Incham's really started to establish himself in the side and make some really great killer passes for forward movement and play of Celtic, I find it odd that he didn't play. I was really, really surprised that that he wasn't in the team, and one of McGregor and Armstrong made it in the team ahead of him. That's surprising.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but who scored more goals? I mean, again, I suppose goals per minute is a more appropriate stat than goals for the season. But Incham seems to me he's scoring quite a few goals now, or he has been. I know all the goals are in that kind of area where you want goals from a midfielder, you know, running into the box or just on the edge of the box. He seems to chip in quite a lot. Not chip in, literally chip in. You know what I mean? He seems to score from there, so... So the case, you might make the case of McGregor or Armstrong will give you more chance of a goal compared to Incham, but that might not necessarily be the case anymore. So that left us light in midfield.
I thought the first half performance was pretty symptomatic of the way that we played all of this season. Better team, creating chances, but nothing particularly sparkling about the way that we're playing.
It's a really odd one, isn't it?
You're just waiting for something to happen and it's just not happening.
Yeah, again, it's hard to hold, you know, two versions of the team in your head at one time so you can compare them. You need to sit down for an afternoon and watch some games from last year and watch the games this year. I mean, they might just—I mean, it sounds a horrible cliche, but you know, there's something missing. And we're top elite, for God's sake. We're pretty good season so far. Won a cup, but there is that. I mean, is it tiredness? Everybody's saying, oh, we're exhausted. I mean, I don't know. We had a lot of games by this time last year as well. But there just seems to be... I mean, I think I'm not sure it is tiredness. I think you can single out specific individual players and say that they've shaded from last season. And when you add all those, you know, increments together, you have an explanation for the difference between this season and last season. So last season, we'd be dominating, or we'd be in top in a game, and the way we were in top in this game for 45 minutes, and we'd have a couple of goals. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the kind of difference. And I mean, Simunovic, well, I think Simunovic played much better last year. He played more games last year as well. I think Craig Gordon played better last year as well. I think Kieran Tierney probably played a little bit better last year. Lustig definitely played better last year. Scott Brown, I think he might even be playing better this year, simply because he's had to. McGregor, Armstrong, yeah, I don't know about those two. Dembele's definitely shady from last year. Forrest has gone up, Sinclair is shady. So there's your explanation. I mean, a lot of it is probably down to just individuals, and you add all that together, and this is what you've got.
I mean, it's an odd one because... You know, Brendan Rodgers is talking about tiredness, and that's, you know, I did a piece on our site where, you know, Pat Bourne on the way home from the game on Radio Scotland was going on about, it's ridiculous, in my day. So I did a bit of analysis, and I can't remember the exact figures now. I did write a piece on the site, and it was something like, in a pick season 88, 89, so the season after the centenary season, by the same point... Yeah. Celtic had played, I think it was 11, no, it was 16 games more at the same point this season than in Pat Bonner's day. Right? And then by the time you chuck in, the players run more and they run for longer. And, you know, I think it was Barca Boy did a tweet at the beginning of December that it was something like Celtic were averaging a game every 4.6 days. And Rangers were averaging a game every 7.01 days or something like that. So the tiredness thing, yeah, that rings true to me. And again, the guys who played international football, their last game was on the 6th of June. And the first Celtic Champions League qualifier was the 12th of July. Or thereabouts. So they actually played virtually a season and a half with no break. All of that.
That's right. It's all in December. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
All of that. And those rings seasons true.
And those seasons are very, very intense. You know what? A better comparison. I mean, Pat Bourne, give me peace. A good comparison. Obviously, I don't have it because I never do any research on anything. But the how do we compare to, you know, say Bayern Munich or Barcelona? I mean, I don't know in terms of number of games played. I mean, they've got huge squads, these players, these teams. Huge squads.
Yeah. They'll play more at the end of a season, because obviously they've got Champions League qualifiers, Champions League football after Christmas. But prior to Christmas, we'll be playing more than them, because we've got, I mean, next season we'll have, is it eight qualifiers before we get to group stages?
So I think that the tiredness thing is part of the explanation. The other thing, I mean, it is that... As I say, you know, so you take the individuals in isolation and you'll find that some are, you know, and part of the reason they might not be playing as well is just tiredness. I mean, Kieran Tierney has to be exhausted. He has to be exhausted. I mean, he's still a kid, 20 years old, and he's been an inordinate number.
And it's the mental tiredness, because the difference that I was making about the difference between Paddy Bonner's day and even Celtic and the rest of Scottish football, the only difference between us and Motherwell in terms of fixtures played, all the additional fixtures that we played over and above what Motherwell have played are Champions League football. Because Motherwell got to the cup final same as us. So the point being, all those extra games that we have played over and above what Aberdeen play and Rangers have played and Hibs have played and Hearts have played are all at a much higher level. Plus, we've got more international players who are playing international football at a higher level.
Yeah. It's, but even that, you're talking about the first half of the game, but even that, so you get a half time, you think, well, we've had by far the best of that. You know, this will be another typical game. We'll have tired them out, you know, tired the opposition out by 65, 70 minutes, and we'll get our couple of goals, and that'll be that. What was surprising to me was it kind of went the other way in the second half. That was a very odd one for me. We just didn't kick on. You know, after having established our dominance, you know, superiority in the first half without getting a goal, you would think, well, we'll definitely kick on, and we just didn't. We actually went backwards, which was a different experience.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about it. I know Remy's been very critical on the Buy Them In podcast about Craig Gordon, but he did pull off two great saves in the second half.
He did pull off two great saves. But again, what exposed to me, and again, credit to the people, they really did what that, you know, not to get too wanky about it, but you know, the high press and all, they actually worked it pretty well, and they put real pressure on Craig Gordon and the back five, and he was slightly exposed again. His distribution, Remy goes on about it a lot. His distribution under serious pressure. Is still pretty wonky. You know, you could see it, and you could see it with defensively. Lustig, I think, well, Lustig's at the World Cup this summer, but I think that might be his swan song.
Mm-hmm.
We really, our distribution under serious pressure was very wonky. And you compare that again. I've been watching over the holidays here. I've been watching a lot of Spanish, Italian, German football. And see defenders under pressure. You know, this is why you pay the money. Under pressure, they just look completely unflustered. They can just play their way out of any kind of press. And certainly in this particular game, we were exposed and has not been able to do that with any great comfort.
If our back five, the person that I was least nervous about having the ball in the second half of that game was Christopher Ayer, the most inexperienced of the five.
But you got to remember, he's a midfielder. He's a converted midfielder. Very comfortable on the ball. He's played there his whole life. And it shows. It really does show. That's the whole thing, Harry. Developing youth players. I said, a pal of mine on Twitter, Innovate FC, goes on about this the whole time. Yes, he was going to be slaughtering Virgil van Dijk, saying he's one-footed. And he could, you know. But it's, you know, developing players. Actually, he goes on about Rodgers. Apparently, Liverpool had the same problem when Rodgers was there as well. Rodgers wasn't, not that he wanted one-footed defenders, but he wasn't that, he didn't appear that agitated by one-footed defenders. And he would happily play a left-footed centre-half on the left and a right-footed on the right. But you got to have, at the top level, I think you've got to be two-footed. Especially defenders, because you've got to work your way out of it. Especially the way the modern game is played now. You've got to work your way out of these presses. And you've got to be able to be very comfortable on either side with the ball.
That's actually,
and Ayer certainly is.
It just as an aside, the thing that really struck me at the Lewis Morgan press conference at the end of last week was somebody said to Lewis Morgan, or Jack Ross says he doesn't know which is your strongest foot. Your left foot, your right foot.
Yeah.
And Lewis Morgan said, oh, I spent a very long time working on my weaknesses to make them stronger. So I'm as good as that on either foot.
Yeah.
And it just...
Well, that's where you've got to be. Actually, I'll tell you who's pretty good at that as well is Stuart Armstrong's clearly worked on that as well. He's not bad. He'll score with either foot. I think he's naturally right foot. But that belter, who did he score against? Oh, Thistle, that night against Thistle. I think that was left-footed from the edge of the box. Oh, top bins, as my lad would say. But again, that kind of exposed us a little bit. I was thinking during the second half, I was just thinking, thank God for Scott Brown. I mean, he is astonishing. I see today, when something came up, Joe Allen to Celtic. Celtic are the favourites to sign Joe Allen or something like that.
Right.
Why would we be signing Joe Allen? It's just like a weaker Scott Brown.
Because
Joe Allen was sold to Stoke. Well, Joe Allen's been sold for about £35 million over the years.
Because Joe Allen's available, Brendan Rodgers has signed him a couple of times, and that's an easy 2 plus 2 equals 4 thing for a slow Presty.
Where do we play? Scott Brown plays in that position.
It's the reason why Kouassi's probably going to have to go out on loan, because Kouassi is an identical player to Scott Brown.
I know that for an absolute fact, because somebody who is in a position to know told me that. I said, what's happened to Kouassi? Is he not going to make it? I said, no, he's brilliant. Just, he's not going to get a game while Scott Brown's around. And that's fine, but my only issue with that is, can't we get Kouassi to, can we adapt him a little? Because he looks like a decent player, very athletic, strong. I'm not sure if he would be much good in advanced positions, but he would certainly be an able deputy for somebody like Ncham, if you're doing some rotation. Can Brown and Kouassi not play in the same midfield?
Or the other thing, because we've just talked about players being tired, and this is the opposite thing I was going to say. I take on board all the comments about players being tired, and if you look at the analysis and the statistics, they play more games, and the additional games that we play at a higher level and all that stuff. Well, the counter argument to that is we've got by far the best and biggest squad in the Premier League. You know, you look at our bench would have all started for Rangers in that game. So the opposite criticism is Brendan's not using the squad enough. But then the other bit is, the one area where he has been using the squad is up front, and the opposite criticism would be neither Edouard Griffiths nor Ncham seem to play more than three games in a row. And they're not getting into a rhythm.
It's odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
But again, it's part of the issue with management, isn't it? How do you manage that? You know, he wants to get everybody playing time, he wants to get everybody fit, he wants to keep the young French kid on board because we're selling Dembele. So he wants Edouard to want to be here. And he's going to try and give him some game time. You know, it's tricky. I mean, that's why, Harry, you and I are two scrubbers running around with a stupid podcast. But Brendan Rodgers is making 2.5 million for the year.
But it is, the counter to that is, if Kouassi is Brown's replacement and he's a really good player, maybe there's been the odd game where Brown should have been rested and Kouassi played.
Yeah, but the argument then is, well, Scott Brown doesn't want to sit, you know, and doesn't need to sit. He actually needs to play. He's one of these freaks of nature who needs more gear, as much game time as you can possibly give him, because otherwise he's a headless chicken. I mean, I have no idea. I don't know. I'm very, very sad, Harry. I'm one of these people who occasionally sit down and switch on to Celtic TV and look at these little videos they send from Lennox Town. And it might be snowing, hail, whatever, right? And the videos always show the players coming out the changing rooms. And you'll see Stuart Armstrong and Patrick Roberts, and they'll come out like they're going to climb Mount Everest, right? And then Scott Brown will come out, short-sleeve T-shirt, shorts that are barely covering the top third of his thighs. He's unbelievable. It always makes me laugh. Kieran Tierney, he dresses the same for training. It's absolutely hilarious. So if the demand is that Scott Brown has to play all the games, then surely he can adapt to Kouassi. Surely he can be taught to play a slightly different midfield role. Give him game time, keep him in the mix. It's a weird one, you know, because we spent quite a lot of money on him, didn't we?
We did. And so you've got, I mean, there's between Kouassi and Ncham, roughly £10 million of midfield talent that's hardly playing.
Hardly playing. Weird, that, eh? I think there's an issue with the scouting department. Transfer policy.
Well, the counter to that is, it depends. You don't know what the manager might well be saying. We signed Kouassi because my plan is, by the time I get to pushing for 10 in a row, Kouassi will be 22 years of age and will be a brilliant player. And Ncham will be 23 years of age and will be a brilliant player. And I'm not building a team for the next 5 minutes. And things take time. That might be the counter argument.
Yeah, That's a very, very persuasive argument, I must admit, when you put it like that. The only thing is, though, you've got to win now as well. As I say, it's a wouldn't it be a brilliant job to be a football manager?
Well, he would then turn around and say, "Oh, it would be," and he would turn around and say, "Well, we are winning now." I tell you what, I don't know if you sensed, I was surprised at how agitated the online, because it's the only way you can really gauge what other Celtic supporters, other than your mates, are thinking, the wider Celtic support. I was surprised at how agitated they were after the 0-0 draw with Rangers.
Well, I think that's a function of two things. One, expectations, and it's perfectly understandable. People were expecting to give them a right good doing. But the other thing is, not to get too up my own backside, but people kind of think about football in a visceral way, don't they, sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very emotional experience. So, of course, you're going to be very upset about a particular score in one particular game, but, you've got to, it goes to the whole reaction to what's happened so far this season. If you actually sat back and thought about it for a moment, calmly, we've done pretty well this season. We're okay. The Champions League campaign wasn't brilliant, but we're in Europe past, into the new year. We're top of the league. We've won a cup very impressively as well, actually. But people don't, as I say, it's a very kind of visceral, emotional, straight away that they're on. I mean, I deliberately stayed out of it. And then I just kind of tuned out. It was Christmas and all that stuff anyway. So I just sort of tuned out because I just didn't want to hear any of it. Because it just kind of drives me slightly bonkers in a way, because I don't think people think straight. I just think they just, they just, it's just noise, isn't it? Without any kind of thought behind it. And I'm, people are entitled to their opinions, but I don't think it's, I didn't see it. Was it really, really bad?
Well, I'm a bit like you. I try to stay away from it because sometimes after a game where the result is not been great, you have your own opinion of it, and you don't really know. I know this, I don't mean this in some sort of arrogant way, but I'm not really that fussed about hearing someone who's in a really bad mood about it tell me how shite it is when I've been there in the 1990s and I know what really shite is.
So that's a thing as well. I mean, not to get, in my day, not to get too fucking bothered on everybody. But I was there. You were there.
Yes.
I mean, it was mints. I was there in the glory days of Anton Rogan.
Finishing fifth in the league and fourth in the league. We were there.
So, actually, I wonder what happened to Brendan's big education project. I don't know. I can't remember now. But what was the atmosphere on the ground like? It struck me as it was a pretty upbeat kind of noise for most of the game. I didn't hear any.
The atmosphere was good, although there was people who booed at the final whistle.
You're kidding me, aren't
you? No, I would say 5,000-6,000 level of booing. Aye, not long.
I suppose people in the game are used to it. I mean, if you ever get around people in the game, almost entirely, they're very appreciative of fans, fan support, they know the fans pay the wages and all that. But you kind of dig a little deeper and people in the game generally think, what is it? They don't know anything about football. They're not really paying attention to the game in a way that people inside the game pay attention to it,
Do you know the only thing you think of
that kind of thing,
about why people would react that way? Because I did go a bit online and they thought I can't be arsed with this and went off. And as you say, it was Christmas, New Year, and you've Christmas. My wife's birthday's between Christmas, New Year. My dad's birthday's January 2nd. I tend to, get back to work, and people say, "Oh, I was getting bored with Christmas, and I'll be looking for a holiday because it's hardly started for me." But I was trying to think why the fans would be like that, and I thought, I suppose there is an element of we've been prepared to put up with things not the sparkling football because the manager's tinkering around to get us into the Champions League, and then we've arrived in the Champions League, and every big game, Champions League game at Celtic Park, has been awful.
Oh, hang on a minute. The Bayern Munich game was pretty good.
Well, Bayern Munich, but you get my point. We've been saving up for these great events, which haven't happened.
Yeah.
Our first, the big game against Rangers hasn't happened. There's a bit of frustration of, well, I was prepared to put off having my birthday cake because I thought I was going to get a fantastic present, but the present's shit too.
that's a pretty good analogy. But I just wonder what Rogers was thinking. You know, when he came in, I'm going to be asking for a bit more patience and all this stuff. walking off to booing. I haven't even looked at the league. What, 8 points ahead or something?
Eight points ahead. 11 points ahead of Rangers, I think.
Well, I mean, go back to. Well, remember the year Lennon almost got fired?
Yeah.
He was 15 points behind. Admittedly, we had a couple of games in hand. What was that, 2011? Can't remember. 2011?
The year before they went bust.
Was it? It was. So, and look at us now. I mean, I just don't get it. What do people want? I don't understand it. Should we be good enough to go and beat PSG? See, I go PSG scored at the weekend. It's just absurd. We can't. People have to, they've got to start thinking a bit more. Just generally. I mean, it's okay to go mental in the first hour after the game, but sit down and think about it afterwards. And think about where we were, where we are, and then where we might be going to. I mean, as you say, Kouassi in a couple of years' time, Nchama in a couple of years' time, Tierney in a couple of years' time. These guys are, they're all just around about 20 years old. I mean, he is building something there. So we've got to think about like that. Well, I mean, except in the moment, it's kind of annoying that we didn't give them 6-0. But hey ho, we'll live to fight another day. I mean, the only upside for me is it gives them a bit of hope, and I always think it's the hope that kills you. They're fired up and ready. Fired up and ready to go. But I mean, it's just comedic. It's just coming. You can just see it's like Wile E. Coyote when he thinks he's got the Roadrunner, and then the cliff goes away from underneath his feet, and he just falls to the deck again.
You could see posts from them. And you could see comments from them saying, if my auntie had a beard, it was all that stuff. If we won those two games, we would now be pushing them. It was all that stuff, and then they get beat by whoever it was. Again, they lose another domestic game.
Ah, it's just brutal. But the whole thing, that, I say 0-0 at the end of the day, not great, nowhere near great, not ideal, especially for me. I had to get up at 3:45. We were out the previous night, and I had to get up at 3:45 in the morning to watch the game. So that was pretty gutting. But it is like the set up for a joke. They've been set up for the joke. The joke's been set up, and the punchline will be coming in the new year, which is that kind of tickles me in a way. But anyway, the players are. I mean, we're off to Dubai. You see all these footage of them training in Dubai and all that. So hopefully that'll. I think I can't remember last year. But we kicked on after the new year last year, didn't we? I think we did.
We did.
Tell me.
And that was one of the things, again, that somebody said to me, what you don't realise is you can do no... When you're playing a game every four and a half days, there is no coaching happens.
You can't.
There is no coaching happens at Celtic from the middle of... What's the person said to me? No coaching has happened at Celtic since the 1st of August, basically since the league starts, because you're then playing a game every second week, so you have the players playing on Saturday, Sunday's a rest day, Monday's a warm down, Tuesday prep for the game, Wednesday. Thursday rest day, Friday run about, Saturday game. But there's no prep time.
Friday will be shaping up for the Saturday game, I would imagine.
Aye, but in terms of it's just a basic prep for that one game, in terms of... But there's no great... So, and that might be also part of the reason why some of the players that we might have hoped might get more game time, like Ncham, like Kouassi, and some of the others. It might be the reason why they've not been getting it, because the manager doesn't have the opportunity to... to sit down and work on different systems for different players and basically, right, I know if I field this 11, I know what I'm going to get from them, so I'll just put them out on the park.
I'll tell you what that game, what the lesson I learned from, well, they should be learned from that game, is we really have to do something to deal with a high press now. I mean, that's now, that's in the books, that's how you play Celtic. You know, Hearts did it, Rangers have now done it. I mean, it's a kind of modified version of, you know, a European way of playing against a team like Celtic. So we have to use this period to work out how do we play against that. You know, we've got to work that out. And part of the reason is we've got to get a back five. A comfort on the ball has to be elevated from where it is right now. I mean, I think in the Scottish context, it's pretty good. But, you know, against better teams, better level, teams playing above their own level, we don't struggle, but we are discomforted. There's no doubt about that. And that's what happened. So hopefully this break, give a chance to do some coaching, sort of try and work out a few solutions to it. It's got to be done because this is what we're going to face for the second half of the season, every single weekend.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Sinclair and his stuff, but I'm continually reminded of seeing an interview with Ray Wilkins when he talked about 2.5 years in Scotland against the best teams in Scotland of Celtic and Aberdeen is like playing 6 years in the top flight in England, because you play the top players so often that they know. I remember the quote he said was, I knew Paul McStay's inside leg measurement by the time I'd finished in Scotland after 2.5 years because I'd played him that many times. So teams know what Scott Sinclair's going to do and prep for him.
But, you know, people should say, right, take Scott Sinclair, right, first things first, the problem with Celtic's performance is not that it's a massive problem. It's not Scott Sinclair. It's not Scott Sinclair, although Scott Sinclair has definitely shaded from last year. But I think people look at Scott Sinclair and think, well, he's shaded. He has, but I think it's in his application to his defensive duties. So when Rodgers takes him off, I think it's because he's not working as hard defensively as he did last year. And then I think that's part of the problem. Tierney's been a bit more exposed and a bit more tired this year, which has had an effect on his potency as an attacking player. But overall, the problem isn't Scott Sinclair has shaded from last year. The problem is this is a back five. You know, how they cope under pressure. Because in games that we struggle, or games that we lose, it all comes down to that. How does our back five cope under pressure? How do they break the press? How comfortable are they on the ball with both feet? And the answer is not very.
But I tell you, the other thing, I mean, I'd mentioned in one of our podcasts that I thought we were a bit complacent, and I didn't mean complacent in terms of being really blasé, but it's just those, as each game goes past, marginal grading of what we're doing comes in, and the thing, somebody at Celtic had said to me after we'd lost to Hearts, and I'd said something about, there's just a spark missing, and they said, well, what do you think it is? And I said, if I was to pick three things, I would say that we are not pressing the opposition as high up the park because we're assuming that we'll get the ball back anyway. Tierney is not overlapping Sinclair because I don't think Tierney feels as confident to push up the park. So as a consequence, he's not going past Sinclair, which makes it more difficult. If Sinclair's got two men on him and Tierney overlaps him, one of those guys has got to go with Tierney. And suddenly Sinclair can cut inside because only one guy on him. And so we're not doing that. And because Rogic hasn't been playing, we've just lacked the creativity in the number 10 position by playing McGregor, who's a hard worker, but he's not as creative. And the one thing I did notice against Partick Thistle, which was the game after the Hearts game, and against Aberdeen, particularly in the second half, was we didn't do this in the second half against Rangers, but we did against Thistle and Aberdeen, was we pressed much higher up the park, and Tierney overlapped Sinclair. And against Rangers, Tierney didn't overlap Sinclair, and we didn't press as high up the park in the second half.
So what you're saying is that Brendan took your advice for the Aberdeen and Thistle games and ignored you for the Rangers games.
Yeah, because it was Brendan who asked. He phoned me up and said, Harry, I need to know the answers. What is the answer here?
But you are right. I think, I don't know who it was. It might have been the BBC and the Michael Stewart show. I think they might have highlighted that. You know, I think they highlighted Dembele and his pressing. You know, the urgency of his pressing on their defence is nowhere near. I mean, last year, he was astonishing the amount of defensive work he did. I absolutely love that. I love that. And I haven't watched him closely enough. I mean, I've watched it closely, but you know what I mean? I haven't really kind of kept an eye. It certainly hasn't caught my eye, his defensive work. And that goes to what you're saying. I don't think Scott Sinclair has been pressing as urgently as he did last year. I think Forrest has. I think Griffith still does. Although Griffith does those, drives me crazy, those pointless presses.
Yeah.
You know, where you'll run 30 yards to try and get the ball off the goalie. The goalie, it's just a simple slip pass from the goalie.
When he's the only one doing the game. He's the only one doing the press, aye.
Yeah. Well, so you got to, again, this is what we were doing last year. Remember, we were pressing in packs.
Yeah.
So three guys would be pressing on the ball at the same time. So the guy, there was nowhere to go for the guy who had the ball. But there's much more of that kind of one-man press this year, which is pointless. It's just a waste of energy. But again, why are we talking this? As I say, we're 8 points ahead. We won a cup. We're in Europe. I mean, yeah, you got it. It doesn't, when you revert to, I'm not saying we revert to the kind of standard. I mean, I think Brendan has set a new standard, but you got to at some stage accept that we're going to revert to that new standard. And maybe that's what it is. I mean, everybody's tired. A few players are kind of shading as is going to happen, in the same way that a few players are going to come on. Forrest has come on.
Forrest has been fantastic.
So I'm looking forward. Oh, he's been brilliant. I was looking something the other day. Who's your player of the first half of the season? I'm like, what? Why are you even bothering? I know why you're having a poll, but don't even bother me with that. I mean, I think he's Forrest by a mile.
Yeah.
I can't see anybody else.
He's
been fantastic.
What was really interesting, and I do think this might have had an impact, you were talking about individual players. So we didn't move anybody on from the first team squad in the summer. And I think that was a motivation of Brendan to keep the momentum going from last season to carry us forward to qualify for the Champions League. But what was interesting in the last couple of interviews, so before and after the Rangers game and after the Aberdeen game, Brendan was talking about the January transfer window. Quite a few players will be going out and a few will be coming in. And the phrase he used after the Rangers game was, the January transfer window may be a revolving door. Which, when you consider that his whole thing has been stability and he doesn't want too many players in and out, because, so do you think we're going to see many changes in Jan?
Well, what we've got, we've got a new centre-half in. The kid's gone back to, is he any good, by the way? I've never really, the Lewis Morgan kid, I can't get any access to any St Mirren or Scottish Championship games, so I've no idea if he's any good.
One of my mates will be listening to this, whose boy was pro-youth football up to about sort of 16, 17. He sent a text to me, a WhatsApp message to a group that I'm in. I'm not sure that Lewis Morgan's not that good, is that good, on a night that St Mirren were playing a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. And within 5 minutes of him sending that message, Lewis Morgan had scored both St Mirren goals.
Sounds like a man after my own heart. So he's one for the future. He just slips in the age profile. He's 21.
Yeah,
I'm surprised. Yeah, well, 21 is probably the maximum age that Rodgers would sign a player like that, because I mean, a lot of habits are set by the age of 21, aren't they? A lot of the kind of technical capability is set by then. But he clearly, I think Rodgers and Jack Ross have clearly got a very good relationship. I sometimes wonder who our manager will be post Brendan Rodgers, and I wonder if Jack Ross might be a shout.
I think Brendan really, sure. really, really rates Jack Ross. Well, to give him the accolade.
Well, I heard him talking
on. To say last season that St Mirren were the best team we played.
Yeah. It was very interesting. I think, again, I heard a Jack Ross interview somewhere, And it was fascinating. I'm sure all football managers do, but I just have no idea because I'm not in that kind of that world. You know, he was talking about our goals for the first third of the season. We set goals, how they break the season into three parts, and you set goals for specific, unique goals for each third of the season. And he was talking about it that way and how they'd achieved most of the goals for the first third of the season. Anyway, it all sounded very, didn't sound in any way pretentious or anything like that, but it just sounded like somebody who was thinking deeply about what he was doing. It wasn't in there and it wasn't a kind of scattergun thing. When you look at some managers and clubs, and it's clear they've just gone in and it's just all about, you know, hear them, scare them, throw a bunch of mud at the wall and assume that some of it will stick and some of it won't. Whereas Ross seems to be, he sounded like a man with a plan. Very, very impressive. So, but I mean, you just never know, do you? I don't know. Do you think he'd be a Celtic manager? Would the Celtic fans in 3 years' time wear a Jack Ross appointment?
I don't think they would because of what their expectation is from Brendan. I suppose it depends. You know, if in 3 years' time St Mirren are third on the table, then they might. But I don't know if he'll stay at St Mirren that long because someone told me that Jamie Langfield was very excited about Derek McInnes getting the Rangers job because he was fully expecting that Jack Ross was going to get the Aberdeen job and he would get to move because Jamie Langfield's the goalkeeping coach at St Mirren. So he was going to get to move to Aberdeen. Jack Ross was going to take his whole team up to Aberdeen and Jamie Langfield was going with him. And I actually thought, well, Aberdeen will be a bigger challenge to Celtic next season than they would have been if they kept McInnes. That's what went through my mind.
Well, the line that was given to me was, Ross is certainly a better coach than McInnes. Don't know about a manager. I mean, there's a difference between a coach and a manager, isn't there?
Well, there is. So I was speaking to someone just as they got Jack Ross, whose kid is in the St Mirren, and you know the guy's got a couple of kids at St Mirren, and he's a big St Mirren fan, and he was saying that they appointed Ian Murray because Dumbarton were doing so well.
Yeah.
And as soon as they appointed him, everybody in football said, "You do know you've got the wrong guy. The only reason Dumbarton are doing so well is because of Jack Ross, who was Ian Murray's number."
Yeah, right. And Ian Murray.
Ian Murray. St Mirren.
Did you ever hear Ian Murray being interviewed? I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, it's always a bit. Managers don't necessarily need to be a super articulate, but I mean, it's always a hopeful sign when your manager can string a few words together. Ian Murray was struggling in that department. Good footballer, actually. Very tidy. I mean, not quite top level, but a decent footballer. Anyway, I can't believe you asked me about the Celtic transfers in January, and we're talking about Ian Murray in the football club. <Yes. laughs> I don't know, there's a lot of rumours around you. You'll read them. You're obviously, you and Peter will be on the phone every day talking about it, but looking at it from a punter's perspective,
let's go through some of the rumours. Okay. So, one of the rumours is that I heard in the summer, we got offers from English Premiership teams for both our goalkeepers. Do you see either De Vries or Gordon moving on in January?
I don't think anybody. Certainly, don't Chelsea will offer you £5 million for Craig Gordon again. We haven't been watching any of the games this year. Actually, saying that's unfair. It's kind of odd that, though, isn't it? How the role of the goalkeeper has developed in modern football. You know, if you go back to 10, 15 years ago, Craig Gordon is premium. He's a great shot stopper. Absolutely brilliant shot stopper. Pulls off some amazing saves. But it's all about the distribution, is it? Which it definitely has improved.
Well, but it makes sense, actually, that the minute they drop introduce the back pass rule, that the evolution of a goalkeeper would somebody have to be much better with their feet. The minute they say that the keeper can't pick the ball up when you pass it to them, if teams are going to then start utilising the goalkeeper as a pivot in a back five, as you referenced it earlier, then he's got to be better than a guy who just hoofs it up the park.
Yeah, and Gordon's certainly better than that. But I don't think. I wonder if we should have bit the hand off last year, took the money. But it's hard to find a replacement.
It is hard to, I mean, that's the point when I sometimes shout at your podcast when Remy's talking about getting the replacement, and people always turn, anytime you talk about, aye, but a replacement, if Gordon's a £3 to £5 million goalkeeper, then for us to get a replacement who's better than that, we're surely going to be spending more than £3 to £5 million, otherwise Chelsea would go and buy him.
Yeah. Well, the retort to that is, yeah, and this gets back to my question earlier about the scouting departments. Early days yet, right? But when are they going to dig us out of Fraser Foster? You know, when are they going to dig us out of Victor Wanyama?
Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know how long
But things have changed even since then. Even since we found Fraser Foster and Victor Wanyama, in terms of the likes of Chelsea and Man City hoovering up, you know, that level of team hoovering up talent. I mean, it was an amazing
season. Yeah, but hang on a second. Go on.
I was going to say, there was an amazing stat by Richard Wilson about, in the last 3 years, the amount of games where the top teams have had more than 65% possession in the English Premiership has grown massively just in the last 3 years. Because the gulf between the talent that they're buying and the next tier down is widening. So our ability to find a Wanyama or a Van Dijk is diminishing.
I'm not sure that's the case. I mean, it wasn't like Fraser Foster was unknown. I mean, he was a number two of Newcastle, or maybe number three, whatever. You know, it shouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility we can dig out another Fraser Foster. That is, I mean, you know, we've got, I mean, we talk about, I know, you know, they're big fans, certainly on our podcast. I mean, Stevie Woods is a sensational developer. I mean, he's proved it over the last three first-team Celtic goalkeepers. He's proved it. He's improved them all. But, I mean, our scouting department, I don't know how long Congleton's been there, but it's time to step up. It's time to kind of dig us out a few gems. But I don't think we'll not be selling any of the goalies. I mean, I think you have heard you in your podcast going on about the big kid Connor Hazard. I mean, you know, we might just be looking for a placeholder. I don't know how old he is, but by all accounts, by your account and by other accounts, he's absolutely, you know, he's got everything is needed to make it at a very, very highest level.
Yeah, and
maybe we just need a placeholder.
Yeah, but maybe if you're Brendan Rodgers. Because, again, he's one who might go out on loan. If you're Brendan Rodgers, you're looking at it thinking, well, Craig Gordon's the placeholder for the next 2 years.
Yeah. And De Vries has just signed a new contract. That's an odd one to me. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
He's not playing. I don't know. I really don't. I have no idea. I'm puzzled. That's beyond my limited knowledge of football and what's going on inside Celtic. I don't know why we...
So in
terms, I mean, we signed him. That was a bad sign.
Well, I was going to say, but then the game he played against Dundee, I mean, again, somebody said to me, he's a much better keeper than he showed in his first few Celtic games because he was chucked in. And the game against Dundee is more like the Doris de Vries that we see every week in training.
I can't even remember that.
He had two great saves. The one game he played this season, if you remember, he had two fantastic saves that kept us in the game.
That's right. Because that was something we weren't saying last year. Goalkeeper had two fantastic saves and kept us in the game.
No.
How many times did we say that last?
So in terms of money, we've got the £10 million from Van Dijk. Sviatchenko said that the manager said he can go.
Hang on, Harry, I don't want the Van Dijk moment to pass without me bringing this up one last time, right? When Van Dijk signed, I just want people to remember this, people haven't been listening to this, so you just put it in your scorecard. When Van Dijk signed, I actually watched the pre-season games. I mean, it was obvious to anybody with one eye that he was some player. And then we went to Karagandy, I think it was, and he had didn't have a great night. But I'll never forget this, Mark Guidi on Super Scoreboard saying, I don't think that guy's going to make it. Just goes to show you, you know, just because you're on the radio. I just couldn't believe it.
It's like people who've criticised and jam. I think even when a player's not playing well, you can spot something in a player that you can think,
of course you can.
There's something about him that, provided, you know, his brain doesn't go to mush or whatever, he's a player.
Do you know the
thing about it? Because I saw somebody tweet that, you know, half of Liverpool's back four in their last game was playing SPL football 3.5 years ago.
Is that right?
Because Robertson at left back.
So who? Robertson?
Robertson and Van Dijk. Yeah. Out of their back four. Robertson and Van Dijk. But I remember... Wow. Yeah, so at the time that we sold Fraser Foster to Southampton, I think that's when Arsenal signed Petr Cech. Right?
Yeah.
And we know we are Arsenal, a perennial fourth to sixth place team. Arsenal, for what, £30 million, could now have Fraser Foster, Virgil van Dijk, Victor Wanyama and Robertson. Those four players could have been picked up at the same time from Scottish football for under £30 million combined. And Arsenal could have... I'm picking Arsenal just because they're a team who continually are not quite getting it there. How much of a better team would Arsenal be if they'd spent £30 million on those four players 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago?
Or if our scouting department and our manager would had less of a snobbish attitude about Scottish football.
Exactly. So we've got the £10 million from Van Dijk, £1.5 million from Sviatchenko. The other rumour is that both Burnley and Crystal Palace are interested in Simonovic. Now, taking into account that Burnley wanted Simonovic and Mapuia to go to £10 million in the summer, but we wouldn't sell, and Simonovic has got half a knee missing. Taking all that into account, do you think we'll sell him?
Give me that again, you lost me.
So, Burnley wanted Simonovic in the summer, and yep. Simonovic wanted to go to Burnley in the summer. But Brendan told everybody that he wouldn't be accepting any offers, so forget about it. Simonovic has got half a knee missing. Palace are also interested in him. Do you think we'll be selling Simonovic?
Well, first thing is Simonovic, not Simonovic.
Don't you go on pronunciation of players' names.
I mean, you got to sell him. I think Brendan's done with him, hasn't he? I said it earlier, he's done with them. You got to sell them. My only thing is, Harry, we need to, I mean, our pal Mark Cooper, right, goes on about this the whole time. Why are we contemplating, if Simunovic is playing for Porto right now, right, and he's playing away for Porto, he's been playing for us, etc., etc., nobody would be coming in with 10 million because they know they wouldn't be getting it.
Oh, absolutely. And the irony of it is, though, equally, there's talk of Southampton being interested in Stuart Armstrong for £8 to £10 million.
They would never go to any other country in the world, you know, or in Europe, and offer £8 to £10 million for a starting, a first pick. And a league-leading team. If Stuart Armstrong was playing, again, if he was playing for Porto, they wouldn't insult Porto by offering that kind of money for a player like Stuart Armstrong. Because they know they would get laughed out of court. What we need to do, somehow, by some kind of strange alchemy, we have to readjust other people's attitudes. If they want our players, don't offer us that. I mean, look at that. I mean, the Virgil. I mean, we shouldn't expect his £75 million for Virgil van Dijk, but that's a theft on a scale of what we did to that club in Belgium with Victor Wanyama. We've got to adjust people's attitudes. If they want our players, they're going to have to pay proper money. If you're prepared to go and buy some, I see Evan bought some striker from Turkey for, I don't know, £18 million or £20 million. I've never heard of the boy. You know, and I play not a great deal of attention to Turkish football, but, you know, And then they're trying to steal Dembele for 15. This is a guy who's a kind of star of the French under-21 national team. And they're trying to nick him for 15 million or 18 million. It's a tricky one. I don't know how we do it.
I suppose Bialowo's counter to that would be, I couldn't get £20 million for Van Dijk, but we've ended up getting £20 million for Van Dijk by having the right sell-on fee. And if we can get the price that these people, if you think he's worth that type of money, then that's the way to do it, is to sell on fees. So Simonovic, if we get somebody in, if we get two clubs interested and they're in at 8, we might be able to get it to 10. And if we then have the right sell on fee, we might eventually make 20 million quid out of him. That's the way you do it, because people just won't spend that money out of Scottish football yet. We need to beat Zenit St. Petersburg and next season finish Champions League second in the group stages for teams to start paying 25, 30 million quid for our players. That might be his argument.
The Tierney one's going to be very interesting, actually. If you look at Tierney and Robertson, and Robertson's now beginning to kick on for Liverpool, and what looks like a very good Liverpool team, what a buy that was from Hull City.
Yeah.
10 million. Unbelievable buy. The Tierney one will be interesting, but you might be right. Maybe it's, I don't know what the going rate for sell-on fees are. What can you demand of a sell-on fee? Can you go, we'll take 33 and a third? You can have them for 10 million, but we want 33 and a third of any sell-on. I mean, I don't know if that applies in modern football.
It was Mark Cooper that said on Twitter, maybe what we should be looking to do is saying to the person, a bit like we've got with Edouard from PSG, we'll loan you for a season. Dembele. If your argument is we need to know that he can make it in the English Premiership,
yeah,
we'll lend him for a season. It's £5 million to borrow him for one season, and then the purchase price is £40 million at the end.
Well, that's you're taking a hell of a risk, though, aren't you? You get your £5 million and he's a dud, and you're left. Yeah, I mean, obviously you get your £5 million, he does the business, then you're looking at £40 million, but it's I'm not sure your actuarial tables would tell you to lend them.
Oh, I'm just saying that's an alternative solution to dealing with the straightforward sell on of sticking a huge big sell on fee in it.
It is interesting. It's funny, we're talking about transfer market, and all we talked about is players going out.
Well, because that was the point I was going to make. So say Brendan says, do you know what, some of these players have reached, I think the sign of a great manager is a manager who knows exactly when the point is to sell, and you might sell the odd player a wee bit at the wrong place, but to say, do you know what, like obviously Alec Ferguson being the most famous one, of saying, you've done me a great job, your time's now end for us to move to the next level. And say, for instance, we sold Dembele for 30 million, right? Or even 25 million. Plus the 10 million from Van Dijk is 35 million. Say we did sell Simonovic for 10 million and Stuart Armstrong for 10 million. What am I at now? 25, 35, 45, 55 million if you sold Armstrong as well. And Sviatchenko, chuck it in, 55 million quid. We couldn't spend 55 million quid in January.
No, we can't. Well, you wouldn't want it either.
No, but we couldn't in terms of, because we can't go out and buy a £25 million player because his wages are 100 grand a week and we can't afford that.
But you use that money, don't you? I think you might want to take a few more risks with it.
Oh, you'd be wanting to buy a few more 7, 8 million. I mean, that was always my criticism of the concept of, I get it, we buy in Van Dijk and we buy in Wanyama and we sell them for 10 million quid. But my frustration with the Celtic setup is, at some point, surely the whole benefit of that is we no longer are fishing at the 1.5 to 2 million pound player, and we are buying the Encham type player at 6-7 million quid. They're surely, because that's how the Portuguese clubs and the Dutch clubs have done it, and now some of the Austrian and Swiss clubs are doing it. That they are shopping at the 2-3-4 million pound level.
That's where we need to go.
But eventually they then move to start shopping at the 5-6-7 million pound level.
Well, what you're dead right. What we need to go from the 1.2 or the 800 to 15 or 1.5. We need to go up to step up to the 3 to 4 million. I mean, you don't go from 1 to 2 million up to 7 to 8 million. I mean, I think that would be a foolish leap, but you got to start ratcheting it up a little bit. And the assumption that A, you'll get better players, and B, you'll be able to sell them on for more. So you take the 1 million player, you sell them for 10 million, but if you take a 2 million player, you might be able to sell them for 15 to 20 million. But we have to take that step up. And where I think we've been going wrong is we're still not. But the transfer window in the summer, when Ninchan was a statement of ambition, but that was about the only one. You know, we need to more frequently. We need to make, you know, to show a bit more ambition and spend them, especially if we're selling players on. And you're dead right. I think Rodgers has it's a real skill in management. You remember, I think Ferguson, the only one he really made a terrible mistake on was Jaap Stam. Sold him way, way too early. But he sold Paul Ince to Inter Milan when Paul Ince was at the peak of his game. And he moved him on. I mean, he moved it for a variety of reasons, but rest assured, if he'd still been if Ferguson thought he was going to be a great player for a sustained period of time, he wouldn't have sold him. But he moved him on. He moved him on. I mean, Cantona was running the show there, and Fergie told him, you're not going to be playing so much, and Cantona retired.
Kanchelskis? Moved Kanchelskis on?
So if Brendan's judged that this isn't Brendan, Mr. Rogers, Brendan Rogers, whatever you want to call him, if he's judged that this is the time to move a few faces on, then the board has to step up as well, and they have to step up from that, the level that we're operating at right now. We have to step it up a gear. And long term, you have to be looking at, I'm sure they are, the Portuguese model, the Swiss, Austrian model, the Dutch model. I mean, that's where we need to be. We are miles behind that right now.
I do think the Compere signing is really interesting because he doesn't fit with the model. But he fits with, if you're going to be trying to bring through Ayer and you've got younger players like Ncham, I don't think there's anything wrong with every so often bringing in a guy who's been there, done that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Who'll do you a job for 18 months to keep everybody ticking along until the players come through. Teach Ayer how to be a centre-half.
Yeah. And he's clearly, he seems to be a model citizen. Is it Compere?
Yeah. He speaks 6 languages.
Well, I mean, come on. what a role model for a kid like Ayer. He speaks 6 languages as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, one of my mates, is a Rangers fan, sent me a text saying, once again, Celtic have managed to sign a foreign player who speaks English better than half the Scottish Premier League.
But in terms of what we need, well, it depends what goes out. What do we need coming in? You know, it depends who goes out in this window. You know, if we lose a striker, we need somebody in. I've no idea. I haven't seen any names kicking around. I didn't even click on the link. Celtic did look at some striker, but I didn't click on it.
No, I mean, 2 centre-halves and number 10, those are the 3 positions that I think we are looking at about bringing in. But you're right, if we sell Dembele, there's been a bit of paper talk about selling, about West Brom being interested in Griffiths and Swansea being interested in Griffiths. I mean, you can see why, if you're one of the teams in the bottom 10 in the English Premiership, there's a guy who scored at the Champions League and is playing for Celtic. If you spend 7-8 million quid and he scores you 6-7 goals, at their level, 6-7 goals is the difference between fourth bottom and third bottom. You can see why they'd be interested in him.
Yeah. The only is, you know, from our perspective, we're not selling both of them.
No.
Which one would you sell?
My gut feel is that I don't think I've never thought Griffiths is a Brendan player.
Yeah. But then you have to look at the financials. This is why you and I will never run a football club, Harry, because we're sitting like this the whole day. I don't know. I've got no idea. What do you think we should do? Let's go for a cup of coffee.
I can see why we would, and I can see why we wouldn't. You have to, I mean, I couldn't be bothered. I couldn't be bothered being in a management position in a football club, particularly in Celtic, because you can't win. But you just have to sit there and you sit down with the manager and go, right, okay, so somebody comes in above X pounds for that player. But you would surely have to do that beginning, just permanently have your players, the type of club we are. If somebody comes in a pound above that level, what's the level for this player, that player, and the other player that we sell? And then just be hard-nosed about it, and we've got it in, so we're selling.
You know, sometimes I think as well, you got to make a bold step and almost force yourself to deal with the consequences. You know, for instance, I would sell Stuart Armstrong right now because I don't think you'll ever get any more money for him than you will right now, and it'll force you to play in Cham a bit more. It'll force you to go and look for somebody else in that position. You know, somebody different, somebody that will give you a different look, a different energy, you know, something like that. Sometimes you have to force yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't work out, but I always remember when Newcastle sold Andy Cole to Man United.
Yeah.
Kevin Keegan came down the steps to explain to the supporters and said, pretty much the point we've just been making, look, do you know what, it's such a crazy offer that they've made, we couldn't knock it back, and what we can do with that money, I think in the longer term, it's better for the whole club. Now, it didn't work out for them, but I understand the principle of what he was saying. You know, again, it's like if somebody came in tomorrow for 30 million quid for Moussa Dembele, what we could do with 30 million quid over the next three transfer windows is immense relative to his one player.
Yeah, as I say, sometimes you've got to do something just to force yourself to deal with the consequences and just to shake things up. I mean, the Andy Cole example is a great example. I mean, Armstrong's nowhere near as important to us as Andy Cole was to Newcastle at the time. But you get my point, don't you?
Oh, I think the Armstrong one's also the very simple fact of he only signed a one-year extension, so if we don't sign him in this transfer window, we've got a problem in the summer.
Yeah, so that's fine. I don't think, being a decent player for a season and a half. I don't think he's certainly not a Scott Brown in terms of his importance to the team. It'll be good to see a different face. I don't know who it would be, but we've got to find him. You know, let's see how Compare shakes out. But, I mean, that's a pretty good effort from the scouting department, you would hope. I mean, on paper, it certainly is good, but you just never know. Turns out to be completely shot, then it'll be a terrible move. And I'll be on our podcast morning about the scouting department every week.
But your point earlier about, you know, don't want to sound very negative because we're top of the league. I'm talking about this, and I'm not seeing the negatives in this because I'm looking at the authority that I think Brendan Rodgers has got within the club and the autonomy that I think Brendan Rodgers has got in the club. The fact that I genuinely believe Brendan Rodgers wants to be here till 10 in a row. So I'm looking at, do you know what? See, if we're talking about selling all these players just now, Brendan's building a team for the next 2 or 3 years to make sure we get 10 in a row. So if he thinks by selling X amount of talent now gives us Y amount of money to have a better standard of player, I'm quite confident that I trust Brendan to be doing the right thing because we're on course for our back-to-back trebles. I'm a player European football after Christmas.
I don't think that... I'm sure there's no... Well, I was about to say, humility in Brendan Rodgers probably doesn't belong in the same sentence. But in terms of what ambitions for the club, I think there's probably a certain amount of humility about everything that he does and what the club is doing. But you got to almost assume that, you know, you're going to win 10 in a row. Is that sense? That's probably tempting fate. But I wonder if his ambitions aren't a bit higher for the club. You know, I wonder if, you know, he doesn't fancy, you know, with a decent draw, he might get to the last 8 of the Champions League and the impact that would have on the club's profile, club stature. I wonder if he thinks we could have a right good run in it. Maybe not this year in the Europa League, but at some point over the next couple of years, we could have a good run in the Europa League. Again, the impact that would have. So I think he might be building teams for that ambition, not especially to keep winning the Scottish Premier League, although he won't want to do that.
Well, I'll think of two things in relation to Brendan Rodgers on that side of things. One is he knows his Celtic history, and I think he's quite keen on having as much of a mark on Celtic history as he can possibly get.
Yeah.
Because your point about humility, and you know, I think he's quite a self-confident and quite an arrogant person. So I think he wants his own place in Celtic history. And the second thing is, much as he's a big Celtic fan, I don't think Brendan Rodgers sees himself being the Celtic manager when he's 50 years of age.
And nor should he, you know.
No, but as a consequence of that, and also the point about him being quite a self-confident and arrogant person, I also don't think that he would want to go back to the English Premiership to be the manager of West Brom or Stoke level of team. So the only way he's going to then get to leave Celtic to the stature that he wants, and this is the reason why I'm not seeing what we're talking about as a negative, I'm just having a conversation about what are the changes that might happen, taking into account Brendan wants to establish his own place in Celtic history, and Brendan wants Celtic to be so good that the job he gets when he leaves Celtic is a stature job. And the only way he's going to achieve a job of stature is if Celtic do something that's mind-blowing in European football, relative to where we are just now.
While you're talking there, I just clicked on it, CelticRumours.co.uk.
Oh, it's not the crap.
It's not the... But I'm just looking... Again, whatever. But the... I'm looking at the... It's not the high-quality rumours like Eddie Pearson shovels out every day. No, it's... But I'm just looking... Daniel Sturridge and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's just... But my point... The point I'm trying to make is... Nobody knows... Nobody knows what we're up to. I suppose that's a good thing. Here's another one. James McLean. I mean, people are just guessing.
Yeah.
And I hope it's because we're doing our business very, very quietly. I hope it's not because we're sort of casting around.
Because we're not speaking to anyone.
That would be depressing.
That's the best way to keep a secret.
I don't actually have any secrets to keep.
Yes. Brilliant. It's great the way nothing leaks out of Celtic Park. That's because we're not signing anything.
This is great. I'm hearing from a very reliable source that Kim Sung-yeon is coming back to us from Swansea. Who but did Brendan Rodgers buy him for Swansea, by the way?
That's a question that will take, that will have too much dead air on the podcast for me to be able to work out as a Googler.
Apparently it was Michael Laudrup, so there you go.
All right. But I do think he would be a Brendan Rodgers type player.
Whose position is he taking? I can't remember.
Stuart Armstrong. Stuart Armstrong's
position. Oh, there you go.
That's who he would take.
We're not buying players in the Premiership. We're just not.
Also, I don't see Peter Lawwell. There's just something about me that always makes me think Peter Lawwell wouldn't bring a player back.
Yeah. You were saying compare doesn't fit the profile. Now is key. I mean, what's key? 26, 27, 28?
He is 28.
Right, so we're not buying a player with no resale value, and being him, well, he's not coming to us for a mate's discount, is he?
No.
He on at Swansea, 50, 60, 50 tops maybe? We can't pay a player like that 50 grand a week.
No.
And nor should. So, we're reduced to making up rumours and knocking them down. That's how little is known of what we're up to. I suppose that is a good thing. The only thing is, we get to the end of the transfer window and it was, as you say, we weren't doing anything all along. That would be a bit of a bummer.
That would be a real bummer. But I just don't see Brendan putting up with signing Compere and that's it. Particularly as you've now got... I mean, the only thing you could say is, if we're going to sign Edouard on a long-term contract, and I'm not saying he should or shouldn't, but you would then argue, well, that's where the Virgil van Dijk money will go.
I guess so. Especially if you're selling 55 million, because we're going to have to get a few players in. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah, well,
they're going to have to be. And we cannot, you're dead right, we got to step it up. We got to, I'm not saying go all the way to £6-8 million players. But you look at the summer there in Cham. I mean, I don't know, does the Roberts loan come with a cause to buy? I'm not sure how that deal's structured.
I don't know, but although I do think we spent money on, you know, I think Roberts loan has cost us like a couple of million quid.
Yeah. If we're buying him for six, we're not getting for less than six.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, whatever, I don't know what the fee is. That 12 million to Man City is total rubbish. That's if Man City win four Champions Leagues in a row. Mind you, that might happen. But not because of Paddy Roberts.
No, it won't be. No.
So maybe we are. Maybe we have stepped up and we just haven't given them the credit for it. But we do, I mean, unless it's an absolute steal or it's a complete punt from the middle of nowhere, like a Victor Wanyama, the days of us, you know, spending in that kind of low to mid, you know, that one, why are we buying £1 million players unless they're seriously undervalued?
Well, the other thing about buying a £1 million player, the way football inflation is, that's the equivalent of buying a £500,000 player 6 years ago.
Oh, less.
Yeah.
Less.
So you're buying inferior players. You're not just spending the same amount of money, you're buying an inferior player. So there's no point in it. If we are moving players on, and, you know, the other way of putting it is Simonovic, it's not like he's been the rock in the middle of our centre-half playing every game, every week, and we're losing our main centre-half who we can't do without. The amount of games he's missed this season, if we can get £10 million with a sell-on fee, we're up.
Yeah. No, it'll be good. Hopefully.
Anyway, so predictions for the rest of the season?
Well, there's two things in there. Predictions and hopes.
Well, what expectations? Expectations probably better.
Well, I think a lot rests on, I'll be really interested to see this Zenit game. I see here in the market, I think they're about to buy some boys for 12 million quid or 12 million euros, some Brazilian fella. Again, I would imagine most people are going to that game thinking, oh, we should beat them. But I'm not so sure. They seem like a kind of super annuated Astana, you know, Astana on steroids kind of thing.
I think they've got the world's most expensive football stadium.
That's right. Air conditioned and all that stuff.
Eddie Pearson will be pleased to get heaters on the roof, I think.
Oh. That's an old one. Not a bad shirt, heaters on the roof.
Oh, he's always going on, because one of our mates keeps going on about if we sell Dembele for 35, 40 million quid, we can't spend the money. And one of our mates keeps saying we should build the Moussa Dembele main stand and redo That's it. Right. And Eddie will always chuck in saying, as long as there's heaters on the roof.
So the Zenit game's a big one, isn't it? That'll be either a lot of faces go out this window and we get a few in. Although, again, if we get a few in of the quality required, then we won't be playing in the Europa League because it'll probably be cup tied.
Yeah, this transfer window, for me, is planning. We've achieved our goal. Our goal was European football after Christmas, which gives more money in the bank. This transfer window is about qualifying for next year's Champions League. That's what it is for me.
But it'll be interesting to see where we're at. I wonder if that game... Well, anything on it. Yeah, I think that maybe before the club would be looking at it going, well, you know what, we might have a sneaky here in the Europa League, like a good run. But then when it's all said and done, you look at the draw, the clubs in there are just insane.
Yeah.
It's absolutely mental. So maybe, you know, we'll take our one tie, write it off, and as you say, plan. Because if we shift a lot of faces out now, that means we're relevant for this game. I wonder if we're already written this game off. I don't know. There's multiple permutations. But that'll be interesting. If we beat Zenit St. Petersburg, that's way above my expectations. I mean, I think that would be a smashing win, a really, really good win. I don't expect us to go very far. There was a point in the season where I thought we might go have a decent run in Europa League, but two things. One, we're not as good as we were last year. And two, Well, again, we might be better in the second half of the season. And two, I just think that the draw, I mean, it's just... a lot of good teams in there.
I read something that their squad has cost, they've spent £160 million on their squad or something like that.
I mean, well, there you go. But I mean, obviously, a treble, I mean, I would imagine that, well, we've got to be favourites for that. I mean, you've got to think the league's done. It's a question of the cup. Now, that Hearts result will give some people some hope. I mean, if we get Hearts in the first round of the cup, can you imagine the hype before all that?
Yeah.
Especially if it's at Tynecastle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't necessarily think, I think that would be a good thing for us, because I think we'd be well up for that, and I don't think they would be able to play anywhere near the way they played that day. I mean, that was a one-off freak. So you've got to fancy us for a treble. Again, should we expect it? I'm not sure we should expect it, but I wouldn't be surprised if we managed it. I'd be disappointed if we didn't. But I think we should. I think we should. We're well capable of doing it. And I wouldn't be surprised to see us lose to Zenit, but I don't think there's any shame in that. And I don't think we can expect, even if we beat Zenit, I don't think we can expect too much more from the Europa League. If we have a good transfer window that sets us up for the Champions League next, because I was looking. I don't. Was it Moravchik 67 on Twitter? He mapped out a course.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's getting harder and harder. It's amazing. In fact, there was one scenario. I don't know if it's this coming season. If we might not even be seeded in the final round, the final qualifying, the playoff round for the Champions League. So we would be like a 5 or a 6 seed playing one of the top 4 seeds. Who would be a much, be a Dutch champions or something. So we might get PSV in the playoff round for the Champions League.
Yeah. Which then is the reason why, as I say, for me, this transfer window is about us setting everything ready to have a go at playing Champions League football next season, because we're going to need a team that's flying, that's all in place. And then also, you've got to be careful who we're signing, because the World Cup is on this.
That's right.
And you don't want to be playing, based on what the route we've got for Champions League football, you don't want to be going to the Champions League qualifiers with half your team not available.
Well, I've got an easy solution for that, Harry. We just sign Scottish players. No problem.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Actually, just thinking about it, so it's your podcast, I want to ask you as well. I was thinking we might put Celtic's chances of winning the treble 55% and 75%. There you go. What do you think?
Because basically whether we win the treble really comes down to do we get an away game at Pittodrie or Easter Road or Tynecastle before the semi-finals. That's really what it comes down to, because that's where we're likely to lose a game.
Yeah. Be interesting. Looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it all. I mean, I'm really missing it already.
And that's why I think the winter break I actually think is a great thing. Why do so many fans turn up for the first couple of games of the season? Because you've had a break, and the whole thing about being a fan is having that faith that your team can achieve something that's unbelievable, that's unexpected. And the thing about the January transfer window, it gives you that break to renew your enthusiasm as a fan to say, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So I'm really looking forward to, we might ship a couple of players out. We might actually sign somebody that's really exciting that makes you think, wow, we've just spent £8 million on a player. I can't believe we've done that. Let's see how the team kicks on. I'm quite excited.
It's always good to be a Celtic fan. Doesn't matter. Well, hang on a minute. Maybe not in the 1980s.
No, not from 1989. Do you know, I always remember going to Tynecastle? I think it was the start of the 89-90 season, going to Tynecastle, and Tommy Coyne scored a hat-trick. And I came away from that saying, do you know what? We're either going to be challenging again for the title this season, or Hearts are shite. And I think Hearts just avoided relegation.
Oh, happy days. In our day, we're talking about the Paddy Barnes of the Celtic. Yeah.
In my day...
I'm actually just looking here, I've just called up the 89-90s. I said, hang on, I said, no, that you've got your days mixed up. Hearts are pretty good, haven't you? They finished third.
Must mean the fourth season, 1991, then maybe.
They only finished 10 points ahead of Celtic. who only won 10 games that year. 10 games.
I mean, honestly, and what was it? Those, one of the seasons must have been like 92 or 93, where Pat McGinley was top scorer with like 9 goals.
Hang on a minute, right, this is that. So, right, we didn't even get into any European tournaments. Our goal difference was 0. 1-10, drew 14, lost 12. Goals for 37, goals against 37. I'm going to get that tattooed on my forehead. I can just take the bandage off when anybody starts complaining about
it. I was just going to say, just do a screenshot of that. Every time somebody complains, just send that.
I'm just taking a screenshot right now.
In my day, Sonny.
In my day. Me and Pat Bonner. So there you go.
Right, well, with that tremendous...
A bombshell.
I will see Lawrence Donegan. Thanks very much.
All the best, Harry. Good to talk to you, mate.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast. As I said at the beginning, there'll be more along soon with Paul from the Fans Against Criminalisation discussing the potential repeal of the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act. There is Celtic Foundation stuff going on. There is a firewalk coming up. If you go onto the Celtic FC Foundation website, you'll find out how you can do a firewalk at Celtic Park. Really good if you've got verrucas or corns or anything like that. Maybe good for burning them off. Go on the Celtic Foundation website, find out more about that. That was Lawrence Donegan of the famous By the Men Celtic podcast. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.